Live from WNUR News, I'm Nick Song. You're listening to the 6 o'clock news on WNUR 89.3 FM HD1 Evanston, Chicago. It's Friday, February 18th, 2022. Tonight on WNUR News, a look at where the crosswalk ends, the new Netflix romance, Through My Window, and a critical look at the media portrayal of women's mental health. Those stories and more coming up right now.
Picture this. You were running late for class.
Thanks for tuning in on this Wednesday, on this Friday evening. In Campus Local tonight, the Sheridan Road crosswalk is the equator of Northwestern. It's an unavoidable location on campus, separating North from South Campus. So how do students really feel about the crosswalk? WNUR News reporter Margot Amuyal goes there to find out.
Picture this. You are running late for class, and the time remaining until your morning lecture is dwindling fast. So you start running through piles of Chicago snow until suddenly you approach it.
Wait.
A place best described by an overwhelming sense of dread and anguish. The light, of course, turns red the second you arrive. You wait, staring at the time on your phone to cross the street, helpless, unable to even jaywalk. If this sounds familiar to you, you have probably tried to cross the Sheridan Road crosswalk near the Arch. Today, I took a trip to this infamous campus spot to see how Northwestern students feel about the location. You're listening to News at 6.
Usually I'm waiting way too long and I really want the light to change, but there's also too many cars to jaywalk.
That was Celia Megalis, a McCormick freshman. Despite living on North Campus, Celia said that she interacts with the crosswalk quite often because she frequently ventures to Target in downtown Evanston for food and dorm essentials. Celia's background also makes the crosswalk especially difficult.
I'm from New York, so I'm used to jaywalking. It's definitely hard to just kind of stand there and wait.
I then stopped another student after they successfully crossed Sheridan Road. Third year Beaton student, Adam Clayton.
I think it's, a little stressful because you never know if you can make it or not.
Afterwards, I ventured a bit higher up on Sheridan Road and approached students who had just jaywalked before the Arch intersection to hear why they made that decision. One student, Sam Gosel, a McCormick sophomore, was spotted, pizza in hand. When asked, he said the pizza inspired him to jaywalk.
It's gonna get cold, so every second counts.
Sam went on to describe the crosswalk as, quote, terrifying, and gave students hoping to cut it off early a piece of advice.
Look right and left carefully before you go, and then hopefully I don't get hit.
Another jaywalking student was Jacob Rice, a Kellogg MBA candidate. However, Jacob, unlike Sam, said the crosswalk did not impact his decision to jaywalk.
I mean, I knew the crosswalk was there, but I don't know. I didn't think too much about it. I mean, I don't have any issues with it, really. I mean, pretty ambivalent towards the crosswalk as a whole.
Instead, Jacob said he just crosses the street at any point he can. Yet, not everyone expressed an apathetic attitude or disdain for the crosswalk, such as Mandel freshman Evelyn Driscoll.
I also just really love the nostalgic vibe of the crosswalk. It feels very important to the experience of Northwestern. I feel like crossing that every day reminds me of how awesome it is to be a Northwestern student.
Evelyn also appreciates the social aspect of the crosswalk.
And I also really like it because it's a place on campus where you're guaranteed to see people, and seeing people on campus makes me really happy.
Another student, like Evelyn, appreciated the crosswalk. Her name is Vanessa Vital, and she's a Kellogg MBA student from Peru.
I felt safe. I came from a country in which traffic is not that good, so I feel here I can normally cross the road without any problem. And I was also lucky because I didn't need to wait any time because it was already 3-4 passing for us.
Some students, however, have developed a mathematical approach to the crosswalk, such as Weinberg freshman Matthew Britt Webb.
The thing is, the journey starts before I actually get to the crosswalk. It's just a constant calculation, you know? If I'm heading towards Allison, then I'm watching the signal. So if it starts to beep and I'm towards the banners, near the arch, then I know I can go. But if not, then I'm just going to wait because I don't want to full out sprint. And then coming the other way, there's the second tree from the crosswalk. If I'm there, by the time when it starts going off, I know that if I hurry up a little bit, that I can get there.
It took Matthew some time to figure out the best crosswalk approach.
It took a bit. I mean, a couple of like awkward shimmies that I realized I would have to run too fast to get there. You know, it's just kind of muscle memory at this point.
But Matthew doesn't think he discovered this approach, per se.
It's definitely not something I discovered. I'm sure this has been a thing since the creation of the crosswalk itself.
Ultimately, to Matthew, the crosswalk is all about personal choice.
Everyone just has their own sort of relationship with that crosswalk.
From WNUR News, I'm Margot Emuel.
Let's go to the State of the N-Union, our weekly coverage on what's happening in Northwestern's Associated Student Government. Senators attended a legislative workshop, so we will hear how likely it is for us to see new resolutions and pieces of legislation in the near future. Here's reporter Paz Baum for WNUR News.
Welcome to State of the N-Union, your weekly ASG Senate coverage. We can expect some new legislation soon because this week senators attended a legislative workshop. Parliamentarian Leah Reisenman conducted a legislative workshop for Senate meeting attendees this week. One main takeaway from the workshop has to do with ASG's jurisdiction. This is the difference between resolving legislation and enacting legislation. When ASG passes a resolution, they are calling on the university to take action. One example of this is that ASG recently passed a resolution asking the university to require students to test weekly for COVID. ASG cannot require students to get tested, but they can ask that the university administration does. On the other hand, when ASG enacts legislation, they are acting within their jurisdiction to make a change. One example of this is if ASG decides to organize a spring cleaning day during which they encourage students to clean up around campus. Because such an event does not require involvement by the university administration, ASG can organize and carry out the event on their own. Senators brainstormed many ideas for both potential resolutions and pieces of legislation. In the near future, we might be seeing all gender bathrooms labeled on campus maps, higher wages for work-study jobs, and, as I mentioned earlier, a spring cleaning day. During executive board reports, Communications Chair Sohei Ying updated the Senate on the ASG newsletter. If your club or organization has an event that you would like to advertise to the student body, contact Sohei. Her email is listed on the ASG website to have the information included in ASG's next newsletter. That's all for today's State of the N-Union. Check in next Friday to see what ASG has been up to between now and then. For WNUR News, I'm Paz Baum.
Hark! What light through yonder window breaks? I'm not sure, but the Spanish teen romance movie Through My Window broke on Netflix earlier this month. Reporter Maria Camaño takes us with her as she watches the film.
Just in time for Valentine's Day, Through My Window, or as it's originally known in Spanish, A Través de Mi Ventana, was released on Netflix this February 4th. The movie is a teen romance film directed by Marcel Flores based on the best-selling novel by Ariana Godoy. The book tells the story of Spanish teenager Raquel Álvarez, played by Clara Galle, who lives next door to Ares Hidalgo, played by Julio Peña. For as long as Raquel can remember, she has had a crush on Playboy Ares. With a Wi-Fi password bringing them together, Ares and Raquel fall for each other. A classic Wattpad story. Author Ariana Godoy, who joined Wattpad in 2009, is a Venezuelan writer based in North Carolina who immigrated to the States. According to Pop Sugar, Godoy has amassed a huge following on platforms like Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Wattpad from fans of the Hidalgo Brothers series. Through My Window is the first installment. Godoy says the book was based on her own personal experience back in college when she was stealing her own neighbor's Wi-Fi. The first book has around 346 million reads on Wattpad, and its English translation, which came out January 4th, has around 4.3 million reads on the online social reading platform. So it is not surprising that the book would not only go on to be published, but also turn into a movie after its huge success. Because of said success of the series, I was surprised that I didn't find people who could tell me anything about the book or movie. So I decided to watch it myself. So here's my reaction to watching Through My Window. And just in case, watch out for some spoilers.
Hi everyone! It's currently 9:14 p.m. on February 16th. There's a little bit of rain in the background. I have my popcorn with me, and Through My Window is queued up, so let's watch. I'll be checking in as the movie progresses. So essentially, we are 2 minutes in, and we learn everything about Raquel and Ares. And so now what's interesting is that it seems like this crush she has is kind of like an obsession that is like borderline creepy. She has all these like pictures of him saved to her computer and is giving real Joe Goldberg vibes as of right now. So her obsession is getting questionable at this point. She just snuck into the guy's school to go see his soccer practice. It's questionable at the moment. We will see. You know, I thought there would be more progression to the movie, but I think we're like less than 15 minutes in, and she already told the guy that she likes him, that she's obsessed with him. I'm confused. I'm hoping that it gets better. Or that this is going somewhere, I don't know. Or that it surprises me, because I'm not sure where this is going. We are now at the midpoint of the movie. So far, still giving me very Wattpad vibes. We learn that the angsty leading man, Ares, doesn't want to fall in love because he doesn't believe in love and thinks love is a weakness. Classic Wattpad. So maybe the plotline will be a little bit more like expected. I still don't know where this movie is going. So we will see. I truly do not know if I will be able to get through this movie tonight. I keep taking pauses because I get tired of it. I don't know. Is that a mean thing to say? I just keep getting tired of it. And I need like a break. It is now 12:43 a.m. and I finally finished the movie. I truly had to take a ton of pauses to get through it. Couldn't just watch it all at once. I feel like the movie was giving the angsty Wattpad vibes that a lot of people look for in these types of movies. I think for a teen romance film though, I feel like the first half didn't make any sense to me. I just kept like questioning like where this was going, and then they tried to fit everything into like the other half. It felt so disconnected from like the first half and then the second half. I feel like they just solved everything without really getting through like the actual problem solving. They just skipped it, and then you just know that the problem got solved, but there was nothing that happened to solve it. I also did not like the chemistry. Like I felt like there was no like romantic chemistry between the actors and the characters. I feel like it was a very forced relationship. I felt like it was giving me like a lot of After vibes of like the After films, but like, I don't know. I feel like it wasn't terrible. I would watch it again if you are looking for a romantic movie to watch. I would not reach for this immediately. Not that I'm a film critic or anything. These are just my thoughts. So those were my thoughts. But if you would like to form some opinions of your own, or you enjoy the classic Wattpad romance, go watch Through My Window on Netflix. For WNUR News, this was Maria Camaño.
And WNUR's annual station fundraiser, Phone-a-thon, is happening right now. This is the only time of year we ask our listeners for support to keep our station on air and ad-free. Donate online at wnur.org/donate or call now at 847-866-WNUR. That's 847-866-WNUR. All contributions make a difference. And out there in oddities, anyone else in their Fleabag era? reporter Allison Rauch takes a look at the commodification and dissociation of young women's suffering on the internet. A warning, this story contains mentions of mental health and mental illness that some listeners may find upsetting.
I'm in my tote bag, skipping lunch, coffee at night, Lucy Dacus, procrastinating era. But maybe you're not like me. Maybe you're in your Fleabag era. Maybe you're in your year of rest and relaxation era. Maybe you're in your yerba mate, scrunchy, smudged eyeliner, platform docs era. If you don't know what I'm talking about, don't worry. We'll get to that. But if you do know what I'm talking about, chances are you're a young woman or someone socialized female. Chances are you also see these kinds of videos on TikTok and jokes online. Girls distancing themselves from their mental health struggles by characterizing themselves by the items they consume, or by simply stating they're in an era. I see this a lot on social media, but I never really realized until another video popped up on my For You page. In the video, writer Rain Fisher Kwan read aloud from her essay, Standing on the Shoulders of Complex Female Characters.
It's become very common for women online to express their identities through an artfully curated list of the things they consume or aspire to consume. And because young women are conditioned to believe that their identities are defined almost entirely by their neuroses, these roundups of cultural trends and authors du jour often implicitly serve to chicly signal one's mental illnesses to the public. One girl on your TikTok feed might be a self-described Joan Didion, Eve Babbitt's Marlboro Red, straight-cut Levi's Fleabag girl. This means she has depression. Another will call herself a baby doll dress, Sylvia Plath, Red Scare, Mew Mew, Lana Del Rey girl, eating disorder. Or a green juice, claw clip, Emma Chamberlain, yoga mat, podcast girl, different eating disorder. The aesthetics of consumption have in turn become a conduit to make the self more easily consumable. Your existence as a type of girl has almost nothing to do with whether you actually read Joan Didion or wear Mew Mew, and everything to do with whether you want to be seen as the type of person who would.
Fisher Kwan's essay stuck with me. I felt like she had articulated something that was bouncing around in the back of my brain that I knew but couldn't say. I reached out to some of my close female friends to see if they understood what I meant about Fleabag eras and tote bag girlies. All of them did.
I think those videos of girls being like, I'm so quirky, I'm in my blank era, are very natural. So I have seen a lot of videos that destigmatize mental illness, but in a way make an aesthetic out of it, as if like being in your blank era includes like both like materials that you own, tote bag, like latte, blank, but also connection to feelings. Like if you're sad as a woman, you must have these things and have these behaviors.
That's Georgia Siemens, Medill sophomore. She's noticed videos like this on her For You page too, and she had a lot of thoughts about how they characterize young female suffering.
I think it is harmful to be perpetuating this idea that like I'm in my Fleabag era, like I'm being self-destructive, because it makes the show seem like an aesthetic when really it's actually commenting on female messiness.
Siemens, like me, has consumed a lot of the sad girl media tropes that these TikToks usually discuss. She's seen Fleabag, she's read parts of My Year of Rest and Relaxation, she listens to Phoebe Bridgers. But she thinks it's important to think critically about identifying with these characters and tropes.
Wallowing is an aesthetic version of recognizing. It glamorizes it. It kind of gives this idea of like a woman in a white dress, and she's like laying in this like field of flowers, and she's just like wallowing with all of her inner turmoil, and it makes it much more glamorous than like sitting with sadness actively and working on it. You know, the idea of like, I'm just going to wallow in my sadness is very privileged, because a lot of people experience difficulties in their life and don't have the privilege of relaxing, if that's the right word.
It is important, as Siemens said, to recognize the privilege in this kind of suffering. Many of the characters that these jokes center around are white, middle-class, educated, conventionally pretty characters. And though anyone can experience mental illness, not everyone is able to experience it in the same ways. But this glamorized, privileged version of female pain does center around this sort of wallowing. It seeks to identify with a higher figure, either a character or an idealized version of ourselves. This is what Fisher Kwan calls the, quote, blueprint for hot girl suffering, end quote.
It's this phenomenon where it's like having a mental illness somehow makes you more relatable to this character that people have created in their head. It's like, oh, this indie archetype, this girl who, she's a tote bag girly, she wears her docs in the winter, she gets oat milk lattes that are like $7, you know what I mean? Like, she's having a hard time in her classes, but like, look at her silly little life.
That's Janine Bradsby, a sophomore at McGill University. She, too, sees a lot of these videos about aestheticized suffering.
Why wouldn't you cast yourself as, like, in that era of your life? Because it's an easier way to say I'm in my Fleabag era than to be like, I'm in my manic depressive era. It's easy to say, like, oh, I'm in my Sally Rooney era, and then not do anything about it. Because that makes it so far away from your personal experience.
Bradsby, like me and Siemens, thought about how this type of idealization plays into dissociation from mental illness. Writer Emmeline Klein coined the term dissociative feminism in a 2019 article to describe the internalization of female suffering. Siemens and Bradsby both ruminated on this, especially how it relates to patriarchy and the male gaze.
From what I've learned about dissociative feminism, it's this desire to wallow in sorrow, continue harmful relationships, change your appearance, and put the desires of men before your own. It's almost as if, like, I'm commodifying and objectifying myself before a man can do it, and that gives me power. And I don't think it does. I don't think in the end you're still objectifying. And Margaret Atwood once said, even pretending you aren't catering to male fantasies is a male fantasy.
It's not that, like, you want to have mental illness, but, like, if you're dealing with anxiety and all this stuff, you want that glamorized version. Articulating that you need help is not an attractive quality.
It is definitely disturbing, at least to me, to think of how internalizing one's sadness can appeal to the male gaze. But even so, I'm aware that I participate in it. Women are conditioned to package themselves prettily for society, and society is still very much driven by men and heterosexuality. But some of my interviewees commented on how this packaging relates to female queerness as well.
Rings and Doc Martens kind of thing, like, you're kind of creating an idealized aesthetic. And because it's so linked to products that you can easily buy, it makes it really easy for other people to kind of adopt that identity. I think that that's something that a lot of people need.
That's Ani Kaman, a Weinberg sophomore. We joked about the stereotype that queer women like to wear lots of rings. But when thinking about the idea of women commodifying their personalities, she immediately thought of queer commodity stereotypes. Bradsby did too.
You have to get certain haircuts. You need certain clothes. Like, you need certain piercings, like permanent body modifications. And it's this entire ideal that's centered around, like, buying these things so that you look the certain way.
There's a lot going on here, I know. But the bottom line is, it seems like we're trapped as young women. We either dissociate and commodify our experiences to appeal more to capitalist and patriarchal society and never confront our problems directly. But if we are direct and loud about our problems, we'll be viewed much less favorably.
Do you want to be oppressed by the world, or do you want to be oppressed by yourself? Do you want to keep it all in and deal with it, or do you want to put it out there so that other people can, like, stomp on you? People will call you crazy because they can. And that's very much a female conflict.
Women are always told that they're, like, not enough, that the way they are. Media never tells them to be, like, exactly happy the way they are. There always seems to be something wrong with them. I don't think normalizing is, like, a word that should be used in regards to mental illness. I think destigmatizing mental illness is important, but normalizing it is just so harmful.
We shouldn't be blaming each other for, you know, playing into patriarchal systems to achieve success and achieve our own goals as non-men. But I also think we have to work to create a world where we don't have to, like, you know, play the game, and we can just, like, exist.
So here's to existing. For WNUR News, I'm Allison Rauch.
And our annual fundraiser Phone-a-thon is happening right now. This is the only time of year we ask our listeners for support to keep our station on air and ad-free. Donate online at wnur.org/donate or call 847-866-WNUR. That's 847-866-WNUR. All contributions make a difference. Now, here are some of today's headlines. Ex-police officer Kim Potter was sentenced to 2 years in prison Friday for killing Dante Wright during a traffic stop. Potter will be required to serve 16 months behind bars and, with good behavior, could be eligible to spend the remainder of her sentence under supervised release. Prosecutors had requested she be sentenced for 7 years and 2 months. Governor J.B. Pritzker said he will take the school mask mandate debate to the Illinois Supreme Court after an appellate court decided not to hear the case. A lower court had ruled against the mask mandate in schools. Mayor Lori Lightfoot denied a permit application for the controversial General Iron scrapyard on the southeast side of Chicago. Residents had fought for years against the project, and the Chicago Department of Public Health said the development would have worsened air quality and quality of life in the area. Now let's take a look at the weather. Tonight we've got a 52 degree warm spell. It's a nice treat in winter, only if you can get past the 17 mile per hour winds and rain all night. Tomorrow, it drops back down to the high 20s, with strong winds all day, and some rain or snow, mostly in the afternoon. Friday morning, expect teens and low 20s, with a bit of sun and a break from the precipitation. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on Twitter at WNUR News, and on our Instagram at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other stories on the day on our Spotify, Google Podcasts, and SoundCloud. You can find us on our website, wnur.news. Our reporters today are Margot Amuyal, Paz Baum, Maria Camaño, and Allison Rauch. Our producer today is Madison Bratley. Special thanks to Sarah Cadora. From all of us here at WNUR News, I'm Nick Song. Catch our next news show on Monday, February 21st at 6 p.m. Thank you for listening. Now, back to scheduled programming.